Sports.com. May you live in interesting times. That is an ancient Chinese curse. And what could be a more interesting time to live than the present, when it really looks as if we might be seeing not just the end of humanity, but the end of the entire ecology of the planet. Many destructive developments are converging, which look likely to spell doom whichever way you look at it. But I would never advocate despair. We have to struggle and we have to try and right all the wrongs and improve the situation. Do anything that we can try to improve on and prevent the direction that things appear to be going in. But I really don't see any future for humanity as we know it. There's no future for humanity as we know it. Humanity really, it just behaves like yeast in a barrel of sugar. It multiplies and it absorbs the sugar until it finally dies. It's just a parasitic creature on the earth. But something can come from that. Something can come from humanity as the next stage in evolution. Something that has learned from the past and can see all the failures that humanity has made. So while the vast majority of people will just simply become extinct, there is a chance that a better quality of person can survive into the future and hopefully make the world a better place. But the trouble is that anyone with that potential is effectively stuck on what has been compared to being on the Titanic, and it's sinking, and really there may be some of us who wouldn't have done the things that caused the Titanic to sink and wouldn't be responsible for it, but we're basically dragged down by the mistakes of others. We just have to hope that things won't get so bad that there is no chance of survival at all. Traditionalists describe this time as being the Hindu Kali Yuga or the Norse Ragnarok, a time of ever-increasing strife and chaos. What is striking about the comparison with descriptions of Ragnarok and present climatic developments is particularly the idea of the sea levels rising. In Ragnarok, the earth is reclaimed by the sea, and we really are facing the prospect that as the ice caps melt, there will be a massive sea level rise. Everyone has heard of global warming, but how many have heard of global dimming? In a BBC documentary about this phenomenon, David Sington, the producer, explains why global dimming is so dangerous. We are all seeing rather less of the sun. Scientists looking at 5 decades of sunlight measurements have reached the disturbing conclusion that the amount of solar energy reaching the Earth's surface has been gradually falling. Paradoxically, the decline in sunlight may mean that global warming is far greater a threat to society than previously thought. The effect was first spotted by Jerry Stanhill, an English scientist working in Israel. Comparing Israeli sunlight records from the 1950s with current ones, Stanhill was astonished to find a large fall in solar radiation. There was a staggering 22% drop in the sunlight, and that really amazed me, he said. Intrigued, he searched out records from all over the world and found the same story almost everywhere he looked, with sunlight falling by 10% over the USA, nearly 30% in parts of the former Soviet Union, and even by 16% in parts of the British Isles. Although the effect varied greatly from place to place, overall the decline amounted to 1-2% globally per decade between the 1950s and the 1990s. Jerry called the phenomenon global dimming, but his research, published in 2001, met with a sceptical response from other scientists. It was only recently, when his conclusions were confirmed by Australian scientists using a completely different method to estimate solar radiation, that climate scientists at last woke up to the reality of global dimming. Dimming appears to be caused by air pollution. Burning coal, oil and wood, whether in cars, power stations or cooking fires, produces not only invisible carbon dioxide, the principal greenhouse gas responsible for global warming, but also tiny airborne particles of soot, ash, sulfur compounds and other pollutants. This visible air pollution reflects sunlight back into space, preventing it from reaching the surface. But the pollution also changes the optical properties of clouds, because the particles seed the formation of water droplets. Polluted clouds contain a larger number of droplets than unpolluted clouds. Recent research shows that this makes them more reflective than they would otherwise be, again reflecting sun's rays back into space. Scientists are now worried that dimming, by shielding the oceans from the full power of the sun, may be disrupting the pattern of the world's rainfall. There are suggestions that dimming was behind the droughts in sub-Saharan Africa, which claimed hundreds of thousands of lives in the 1970s and 1980s. There are disturbing hints that the same thing may be happening today in Asia, home to half the world's population. My main concern is global dimming is also having a detrimental impact on the Asian monsoon, said Professor Virabhadran Ramanathan, one of the world's leading climate scientists. We are talking about billions of people. But perhaps the most alarming aspect of global dimming is that it may have led scientists to underestimate the true power of the greenhouse effect. They know how much energy is being trapped in the Earth's atmosphere by the extra carbon dioxide. What has been surprising is that this extra energy has so far resulted in a temperature rise of just 0.6 degrees centigrade. This has led many scientists to conclude that the present-day climate is less sensitive to the effects of carbon dioxide than it was, say, during the Ice Age, when a similar rise in carbon dioxide led to a temperature rise of 6 degrees. But it now appears the warming from the greenhouse gases has been offset by a cooling effect from dimming. In effect, two of our pollutants have been cancelling each other out. This means that the climate may in fact be more sensitive to the greenhouse effect than thought. If so, then this is bad news, according to Peter Cox, one of the world's leading climate modellers. As things stand, carbon dioxide levels are projected to rise strongly over the coming decades, whereas there are encouraging signs that particle pollution is at last being brought under control. We are going to be in a situation, unless we act, where the cooling pollutant is dropping off while the warming pollutant is going up. That means we'll get reduced cooling and increased heating at the same time, and that's a problem for us, says Cox. Even the most pessimistic forecasts of global warming may now have to be drastically revised upwards. That means a temperature rise of 10 degrees centigrade by 2100 could be on the cards, giving the UK a climate like that of North Africa and rendering many parts of the world uninhabitable. That is unless we act urgently to curb our emissions of greenhouse gases. The release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere could potentially turn out to be a strongly self-reinforcing feedback process. Maybe this is what happened on Venus, which now has an atmosphere dense with carbon dioxide and a temperature of about 450 degrees centigrade. Global food shortages are resulting in famines and in the spread of genetically engineered crops. These Frankenstein foods are untested long-term regarding the effects they could have on human health. The climate change is causing crop failures at such a rate that now the world's stockpile of grain has become perilously low. Famine could potentially strike even the West. We are overdue for a massive pandemic of some kind, like the devastating flu that happened in 1918 and killed more people than the Great War, which is World War I, that killed between 20 and 40 million people and had been cited as the most devastating epidemic in recorded world history. If or when this happens, we can expect no deliveries to our supermarkets. But apart from the pandemic, we are so perfectly set up to suffer with our ridiculous overpopulation. Other global threats to food supply are peak oil, possible war, and that's possible world war, and the more immediate effects of water shortages, salination, soil erosion, and pests. Water shortages in parts of the world are sure to lead to wars. Whiskey is for drinking, water is for fighting over, as Mark Twain once said. A report from IRIN, Integrated Regional Information Networks, which is run by the United Nations, says, financial markets are beginning to take an interest in investing in water companies, recognizing that if an estimated 2 billion people are expected to be short of water in 2050, the resource could become more valuable than oil. Regional disputes and intrastate conflicts over water are already common in many countries. Some analysts say that future wars will be fought over water, not oil, and claim that water wars are inevitable. 5 years ago, the U.S. National Intelligence Council reported that the likelihood of interstate conflict over water would increase in the next 15 years. Publications and research papers with titles linking water and war reverberate around the world, and the current statistics give little cause for optimism. Since the advent of modern medicine, humans have been accumulating a massive mutational load that threatens to make us extinct. Mutational load is the total genetic burden in a population resulting from accumulated deleterious mutations. It can be thought of as a balance between selection against a deleterious gene and its production by mutation. At the equilibrium, a dominant deleterious mutation has a frequency of MS, where M is the mutation rate and S is the selective disadvantage of the mutation. In this case, the mutational load can be calculated to be equal to the mutation rate. The load expresses the fact that individuals are dying because of the deleterious mutations that arise. The population carries a load of deleterious mutations, which reduces the average fitness of its members. Thanks to modern medicine, and basically to the ways of civilization itself, which perpetuate the weak at the expense of the strong, natural selection has not been allowed to weed out the genetic deleterious genes at all. Natural selection has not been allowed anywhere near the free hand it would have in nature to reduce the number of deleterious genes in the gene pool, and so these are building up in our species as a whole, inevitably. Contamination and pollution are major causes of bioaccumulated mutagens. Experiments have shown that genetically adapting to survive in a polluted environment can result in the population being so genetically altered that if they were put back into the non-polluted environment, they would die, and the pollution itself causes mutations, altering germ cells. This was found in an experiment involving fish. It's mentioned in the article I'm about to quote from by a major Canadian geneticist, Michael Easton, entitled Environmental Mutagens, A Crisis of Our Time. Easton says that pollution caused by humans could quickly cause such massive deleterious mutational genetic load that we may go extinct. Quote, germ cell mutations, even if harmful and selected against, will likely remain in the population for many generations. Thus, in an environment of a chemically induced increase in the background mutation rate, there will be an increasing legacy of useless or harmful genetic material that is created within each generation by an ever-increasing build-up of genetically toxic chemicals. These effects may be compounded each generation. Under polluted conditions, natural mutation events are slowly accumulated and form a reservoir of material, genetic load, for evolutionary change. At high levels, this mutational load becomes a drag on the population and can result in an enormous burden of useless mutated genes, resulting in a greater embryo and pre-reproductive mortality. At lower levels, the genetic flexibility of the population is diminished. The end of many species, possibly including man, could come about not from the catastrophic effects of atom bombs, but from the genetically damaging effects of our toxic environment, short-sighted industrial practices, and the ineffectiveness and inadequacy of present government regulations to reduce the rate of an ever-increasing debt of genetic damage. Unlike the fiscal debt, the genetic damage debt can't be paid off. End of quote.
Yeah.
apart from the physical dysgenic pressures resulting in an accumulation of harmful mutations in the human gene pool, there is also the intellectual depletion to consider. Advanced civilized society relies upon there being a critical number of people of high intelligence for things to continue. What we are seeing is that the most intelligent are failing to maintain their numbers, while the least intelligent are outbreeding them. Not only this, but the cohesion necessary for society to run smoothly is breaking down, as ethnic bonds are broken. The welfare state and laws on minimum wages use money to hold society together, but these safety nets are being strained, and there are signs that one day they will be removed or fall apart, leaving us with a society riven by huge chasms in living standards. We will see the emergence of walled towns and cities in which the wealthy are protected from the poor outside the gates. This situation already exists in some countries like Brazil. Outside the gated communities lies violence and destitution, while those inside the gates feel compelled to do everything they can to maintain their status and to avoid doing anything that might result in losing their jobs. In terms of quality of life, this certainly is a worrying scenario, whichever side of the fence you find yourself on. With the vast explosion in human numbers, particularly in the developing world, these people who are flooding over into the West, with them comes the threats to our existence of deforestation, collapsing fish stocks, desertification, global spread of chemical toxins and poisoning of the oceans. Adding to this, there are some threats that are entirely created by Western science. There is the possibility that nanotechnology, which seeks to soon allow the development of self-replicating mechanical robots as small as bacteria, which feed on dirt and organic matter generally, that this nanotechnology will escape into the environment and turn everything organic into grey goo, to use Prince Charles's choice of term. These replicators could eat up the biosphere or otherwise destroy it through poisoning, burning, or blocking out sunlight. All it would take would be someone of malicious intent to release nanobots into the environment. The same kind of disaster is possible with the increasing abundance of genetically engineered viruses. These are created with the justification that they can be used to make better medicine, something that in itself is responsible for the snowballing degeneracy that makes the future for humanity seem utterly hopeless. Then there is the CRN, CERN, Particle Accelerator. The Large Hadron Collider is due to be switched on in late 2007, any time now, unless they've decided to put the date back any further. This particle accelerator experiment may cause a breakdown of a metastable vacuum state, which would affect space, so that a sort of bubble of destruction would sweep through the galaxy and beyond at the speed of light, tearing all matter apart as it proceeds. Alternatively, it could pull the planet into a mini black hole or produce strangelets, causing a chain reaction which converts the Earth into a hot cloud of strangelets. Such an experiment is completely irresponsible, and scientists should not have the right to threaten our existence in this way. It is reminiscent of when there were serious fears that testing the atom bomb would result in setting fire to the atmosphere. The Nazis first considered this and decided that the risk should not be taken, but the American physicists went ahead with it anyway. AIDS is a historically unprecedented disease which threatens to wipe out whole ethnicities, and there is always the possibility that AIDS could mutate to become a contagion as common as the common cold. We are certain to see some serious demographic changes as a result of AIDS, but this is more likely to be something that gives breathing space to improve the world than to end civilization or humanity. Globally speaking, AIDS is a big hope rather than a fear. In his book Half Gone, Oil, Gas, Hot Air and the Global Energy Crisis, published last year, Jeremy Leggett quotes Munich Re, the world's largest reinsurance company, warning, quote, according to current estimates, the possible extent of losses caused by extreme natural catastrophe in one of the world's metropolises or industrial centres would be so great as to cause the collapse of entire countries' economic systems and could even bring about the collapse of the world financial markets. Yes, indeed, we live in interesting times and will be likely to see humanity approaching some kind of ultimate judgment, ordained by nature rather than God, which will end life as we know it. Within the next century, things look set to have changed vastly from how they are today. Basic elements such as copper are running out, not to mention oil and coal. Scientists have concluded that we would need another planet Earth by 2050, at the rate that resources are being used up. Something has got to give. While humans are to blame for the disaster, and surely by their nature will make themselves extinct, some people are beyond human, not so much superhuman, that would be a gross exaggeration, but rather post-human, and what we hope for is that somehow those with a post-human attitude can prevail after the humans are gone. Post-humans respect the environment. They are both environmentalist and nationalist, as loyal to their kin and ethnicity as they are to their ecology. Indeed, to be loyal to humanity itself amounts to being a traitor to the planet. So we must value trees above most human lives, returning to the old Anglo-Saxon law of the death penalty for cutting down a tree. Cut consumption to a minimum. Buy organic produce that's locally sourced. Walk or go by bike rather than using a vehicle. We must justify our existence by contributing to a better post-human world. It will get worse before it gets better, probably very much worse. But it's up to you and I to do what we can to bring about a brighter future.